You're listening to People, Places, Planet, the official podcast of the Environmental Law Institute, a nonpartisan, nonprofit research and education institute making law work for people, places, and the planet. If you enjoy the podcast and want to support our work, consider donating at eli.org/donate.
Welcome to this week's episode of People, Places, Planet. My name is Sarah Backer, and I'm your host. ELI has partnered with Sidley Austin LLP to launch the fourth season of the podcast series entitled The Enforcement Angle. Through the year-long series, our goal is to discuss state and federal regulation and enforcement of environmental and energy laws with senior officials in the United States and globally. On today's episode, Nicole Noeliste, a senior managing associate in the environmental group at Sidley Austin in Washington, D.C., and former honors attorney at the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, NRC, speaks with Robert Taylor, Deputy Office Director for New Reactors in the Office of Nuclear Reactor Regulation at the NRC, regarding the agency's licensing of advanced reactors. Mr. Taylor has led responsibility for the NRC's review of the next generation of advanced nuclear reactor designs and licensing first-of-a-kind new small modular nuclear reactors. In addition to his work with advanced reactors, Mr. Taylor leads the agency's activities related to relicensing of the nation's operating nuclear power plants, licensing new medical isotope production facilities, oversight and licensing of the nation's 30 operating research and test reactors, and resolving material safety issues at nuclear power plants.
So Rob, thank you so much for joining us. We're really excited to talk about advanced reactors. I'm actually a former NRC employee as well. I was at the agency in 2015 as an honor law graduate, so I love the opportunity to talk about all things nuke. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Pleasure to have you back, and things are wonderful. We have so many opportunities here at the NRC that there's no dull days here. So today was an incredibly busy day, as they all are, as we're preparing for advanced reactors. So I'm excited to be talking to you today and sharing some of the good work that we're doing here at the NRC.
Awesome. And before we start talking about all that great work, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where did you grow up? Your favorite sports teams, favorite vacation destination?
Absolutely. So I grew up in Morgantown, West Virginia, which is about 60 miles south of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So I am a country boy at heart. My family owns an Angus farm, and so we have the best beef you will get in your life. So just I spent my days on the farm, spent my days in the woods, and I just still love that today, teaching it to my kids as well. So growing up so close to Pittsburgh, I'm a huge Pittsburgh fan with regards to the Steelers and the Penguins. In fact, tonight, the Penguins are in town here in Washington, D.C., playing the Capitals, and I am going to the game with one of my Pittsburgh buddies. So we're going to go antagonize a whole bunch of Capitals fans. I'm sorry, Capitals fans, but I'm looking forward to it. And so love to vacation with my family. We just got back over spring break from Vermont. We went to Stowe, Vermont, and skied at that resort, and it was beautiful. They'd gotten 39 inches of snow in the last month. And so my kids had a blast. My youngest is a snowboarder who's really enjoying it. And he just wore me out for a week. So it was a blast. It was so much fun. My wife loves the beach, so I owe her a beach trip here coming up.
That's awesome. How far of a drive was that up to Vermont from Washington?
About 8-9 hours.
Okay.
It's a really scenic drive, especially through Connecticut and New York and stuff. It's just beautiful up there.
That's awesome. Well, I'm so happy you're getting time in for vacation and family time.
Yep. Very important.
Very important. So many of our viewers, you know, are well acquainted with the function and mission of the EPA and FERC. Can you talk a bit about the NRC? What's the regulatory mission, the structure of the organization and the regional offices? Can you talk a bit about that, Rob?
Absolutely. So the NRC's mission is to license the safe use of nuclear technology for civilian and commercial purposes in the United States. So we're responsible for all of its uses in the commercial area. And so think everything but nuclear weapons and those kinds of things is our responsibility. The NRC was preceded by what's called the Atomic Energy Commission, which was founded in the 1950s under Eisenhower for the Atoms for Peace program. But there was a recognition in the 70s that AEC had responsibility for both promotion and regulation of reactors, and that's not a good thing. That's a conflict of interest. So in the 70s and 1974, Congress split us into two agencies. The NRC was one, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the other was the predecessor of what is today the Department of Energy. So we still work closely with the Department of Energy on a lot of things. They promote the use of nuclear power. We oversee and regulate the safety of it and make sure that it doesn't have adverse effects on public health. So if you're getting your power from a nuclear power plant, if you're getting radiation treatment for cancer or something like that, we regulate all of those materials. In fact, there's a lot of nuclear material out there that supports our everyday lives that people have no idea is there. And they have no idea because it's used so safely, because we're focused on it all the time. So you kind of hinted at it. The NRC has a headquarters office here in just on the outskirts of Washington, D.C. in Maryland, Rockville, Maryland. But we have regional offices where our inspectors are based, our regional inspectors. So we have one outside of Philadelphia, one in Atlanta, one outside of Chicago, and one in the Dallas-Fort Worth area as well. But then we also have our inspectors stationed at every operating nuclear power plant in the country to provide day-in, day-out oversight of those facilities and ensure they're safely run. Within the NRC, there are many offices with different responsibilities, and I'm in the Office of the Nuclear Reactor Regulation, so we're responsible for the actual reactors themselves. There's an office responsible for all the material uses of nuclear in the agency, and then another big office is one that's responsible for our big research program to make sure we stay ahead of the technology and we know what's important and what can be done safely.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for that great summary. You know, in private practice, I get lots of questions about what the NRC does, and many people think that the NRC only licenses reactors, but there's also a huge materials program. Can you talk a bit more about the types of radioactive materials that the NRC regulates and licenses?
Yeah, so we classify our materials into various categories, so based on their potential risk to public health and safety. And then we have a program to make sure that the more risky materials get more oversight and more NRC attention as we license them. So you'll find a lot of nuclear materials in hospitals used in a variety of diagnostic and therapeutic capabilities. They're really instrumental in so much that we do relative to treating people for cancer and other medical conditions. But you also find nuclear materials in things as simple as exit signs. There's tritium in exit signs. There's tritium in your watches that glow. Those are really low levels and very, very safe and generally licensed by the NRC. But we don't need to have day-to-day oversight because they don't pose any risk to public health and safety. So there are nuclear materials throughout the country, and they provide a lot of value. There's well logging so that you can drill wells efficiently and safely. We use them in that function and stuff. So there's a lot, and we give oversight, and we have to maintain inventory of so many of those, and they have to be reported to the NRC on a regular basis. So we give it a lot of oversight to make sure that they can be used safely, but they add so much value to society that it's worth having well-overseen, well-used materials programs throughout the country.
Yeah, that's a great summary of the radioactive materials that we use every day. We might not even know they contain radioactive materials.
Yep.
So let's talk a bit about reactors, the power reactors. How many reactors are currently operating in the U.S. today, both on the commercial and the research side of things?
So, great question. Today, there are 94 operating reactors throughout the United States. The most recent coming online are the Vogtle units in Georgia, which are two of an advanced reactor kind of design that have enhanced safety features and capabilities and things like that. I actually got to work on that project for a period of time, and it's so exciting. It's so exciting to watch those facilities be built and to watch them come online safely and operate safely to provide electricity to that region. The other 92 are spread out throughout the country, providing electricity in various regions. I also am responsible for the licensing program as they age and to make sure that they remain safe over time. So we do relicensing of those facilities periodically. So they're originally licensed for 40 years, but we can extend the licensing periods in intervals of 20 years for them. But they get a rigorous safety review before we do that. And these plants are incredibly safely run. With those inspectors at every facility, we're on top of their day-to-day activities and looking at what they're doing to have confidence that they're running the facilities in a very safe manner. And the industry does a really good job of that. On the research reactor side of the house, I actually have responsibility for research reactors as well. Today, there are 30 operating within the country, and they range from about 20 megawatts, which is a big one, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, just outside of Rockville, Maryland, here where I am in Gaithersburg. And it does tons of research that's really valuable for society and demonstrating the capabilities and enhancing our understanding of subatomic particles and the capabilities of materials and things like that. But they also go as small as like 5 watts. So think about an LED light bulb. Some of these are as small as that. And that's really, they pose minimal to no risk to public health and safety. It's almost virtually impossible to have any type of accident at those types of facilities. So these research reactors, even at the 20 megawatt size, are 70 to 100 times smaller than some of the big, large light water reactors that provide electricity throughout the country. But they provide a tremendous service in research and testing and analysis capabilities throughout the country.
Yeah, that's a really helpful overview of reactors and also materials. So thank you very much. Now I want to transition into a few questions about your actual role at the NRC. So what is your role and how long have you held that position?
So for the last 5 years, I've been the Deputy Office Director in the Office of Nuclear Reactor Regulation, responsible for new reactors. So that's my simple title. I wanted a very short title that I could say easily, because we're really good in the government at making long titles.
And acronyms. And then making
and acronyms, absolutely. You led me right into that. But in reality, so while I have responsibility for licensing the next generation of reactors, so whether they're large reactors like the ones we're currently using or small modular reactors or some of the even micro reactors that we talk about, those all fall under me. I also, as I indicated, have responsibility for the relicensing of the existing nuclear power plants in the country. And then something folks may not realize is we're building medical isotope facilities, the ability to generate new medical isotopes for therapeutic purposes in the United States. And I have responsibility for that. And then lastly, because I didn't have enough to do, I get the responsibility for the materials program. So, you know, how will carbon steel behave in a nuclear reactor for all the operating reactors in the country? So I have a large portfolio, but I have an incredible staff. I have just one of the most amazing, most dedicated staff that you will find. And every day they show up focused on safety and focused on making sure that these materials and these reactors can be used for the public good.
That is awesome. I talk a lot about my time at the NRC with my colleagues here, and honestly, some of the most brilliant and service-oriented civil servants are at the NRC. So I definitely believe me when you talk about the staff that supports you there. So there's been a lot of buzz around advanced reactors in the New York Times and online. I get a lot of questions from clients, colleagues, friends. What are advanced reactors? At a high level, what are advanced reactors? How do advanced reactors produce power?
It's a great question. And it's actually a hard question because there's so many new technologies being developed and being considered for commercial deployment. But I'll talk about it at a pretty high level. So they really fall into two realms. So if you think about an advanced reactor, it's a reactor that has enhanced safety features, more reliance on passive mechanisms instead of active. Like, I don't need as many pumps. I don't need as many operator interventions to demonstrate safety. So that's what we're really talking about when we talk about advanced reactors, is upping the level of safety for the public. So they fall into two general areas. Those that are water cooled, we call them light water reactors. That's what all the operating reactors are cooled by. But the next generation that's being considered have additional capabilities for using that coolant to stay cool. They might do it through natural circulation instead of pumps to move the water. And that inherently is relying on science and physics instead of man-made capabilities to keep the facility safe. The other is what we call the non-light water reactors. So they fall in a number of different capabilities. And what we're referring to is what is used to cool the reactor and to transfer the heat from the reactor to the turbine generators to generate electricity, to generate process heat and other forms that can be beneficial. And they often use things like sodium or salts for coolant, molten salt we call them, or they'll use gas, some are helium cooled. So there's a number of different technologies that are being explored and considered. Some of these have been around. The concept has been around since the 60s and 70s, and the NRC licensed some of these early technologies, and they ran in the United States at various facilities producing electricity. But the country really went in the direction of light water technology, water-cooled reactors, for many, many years. So this advanced reactors is taking technologies and insights and all the lessons we learned way back then and developing the next generation, using the state of the art that we can do today that we couldn't do back then. Our understanding is so much greater on nuclear power and how to cool, how to move the heat and things like that. So that's really what it is. Advanced reactors hold the promise of being safer and more efficient and more capable of providing the electricity we need. And they have so many different opportunities and deployments. They're going to be used for process heat and chemical facilities and things like that. So they just pose a new paradigm, a new opportunity for the country.
Very interesting. And are there any additional key differences between the operating power reactors and the advanced reactors that you guys are looking at the NRC?
There certainly is. One of the most fundamental is that the country is looking at deploying smaller reactors. So
okay.
The big ones that are out there today are about 1,000 megawatts electric. So that's a lot of power coming out of those facilities. The new ones being considered, so when we talk about small modular reactors, we're talking about reactors that are typically around 300 megawatts, so about a third of the size of the large light water reactors. And the concept there is they're easier to construct and faster to deploy. It takes a long time to build the large light water reactors, and they cost a lot to build. So these smaller reactors should be easier to deploy, can be put in more places than the large reactors could originally. And then you also get to some that are, as we call them, micro reactors. That may be as small as 5 megawatts up to 10, 20 megawatts. And they might have very specialized uses, like locations where grid reliability is a problem. You don't have a large electrical grid to distribute the electricity. So there's so many different types out there right now that they're meeting a lot of different commercial needs that are out there. And they're replacing, the beauty is they can replace some of the carbon emitting technologies like diesel generators and things like that that are used in those locations and those situations and have a decarbonization effect and help climate change overall.
Yeah, very interesting. Honestly, I've read a lot and worked with clients on the SMR front, but the micro reactors, it just sounds fascinating. So thanks for the overview there. So one of the perceived challenges of nuclear power is spent fuel production. How does spent fuel production of advanced reactors compare to the power reactors?
So it's a great question. The fundamental concept of fission technology, which is what we're talking about here in the reactors, is the same for a small modular reactor or a micro reactor as it is for a large light water reactor. The form may change. How the fuel is designed, we're going from large cylindrical tubes that might be 12 feet in length. Some are going to use what we call TRISO. They're graphite balls with the fuel encoded inside, and they have huge safety benefits. So the concept is generally the same. You produce the fission products, and you have to manage those fission products, which have some have very long lifetimes and can be dangerous for a long period of time. But we have the technology to safely store all of this, right? Even today, the used fuel is safely stored at the reactors in canisters. So we're not worried about the ability to safely store the fuel. Of course, the country will have to deal with the long-term question at some point, but we can manage the safe operation of these facilities and manage the safe storage of the fuel that they generate during their lifetimes. If a smaller reactor needs less uranium means less fission products, means less spent fuel to deal with.
Right.
There are actually companies today considering something that's been talked about for a long time, and that's reprocessing fuel. Taking used fuel, because just like anything, you can't use it all. You'll never get all the uranium to fission in them, and reprocessing it and recovering it and then reusing it. And then that can significantly reduce the amount of spent fuel that the country has to manage and handle. So there's a lot of opportunity out there and companies thinking about how to do those kinds of things safely and how to recycle some of that.
Right. Very fascinating. So we're going to move away from the technical conversation to legal, which is what I love. I'm a lawyer here at Sidley.
So this is, I love my lawyers.
This is my arena. So in 2019, the Nuclear Energy Innovation and Modernization Act directed the NRC to establish a framework for licensed and advanced reactors. Accordingly, the NRC published a draft rule known as Part 53 to regulate the licensing of advanced reactors. Can you speak briefly about the history of this rule and the anticipated framework? When should we expect Part 53 to be finalized?
So Part 53, where it is today, the current regulatory frameworks for licensing in the United States are what we call Part 50 and Part 52. There's two different ways to license a nuclear reactor. And what it really is just how many steps there are in the process. And it meets different business needs that companies may have, because some may want to take multiple steps and some are ready to jump straight to licensing based on how far they've gotten in the development of their technology. But the history of the development and the growth of those regulations, they became very prescriptive, very explicit in the requirements that were needed to be met. And there's a benefit to that. It helps with clarity in the sense that everybody knows exactly what needs to be done and what needs to be demonstrated. But it also can take away some flexibility and limit capabilities. They were also built exclusively for light water technologies because that was where the country was going. So what Part 53 does is we step back and we ask ourselves, how do we build a licensing framework that is technology neutral? It doesn't care what your moderator or your coolant is in the facility. That's risk-informed. So risk-informed means we apply the right focus to the most important safety issues of a facility and less focus on things that are not important. So where do we emphasize the safety in the facilities to protect the public to the best capability? And then the last is performance-based. So performance-based means we just write it at a higher level so that we allow flexibility in how to meet the regulations. So Part 53 was really an opportunity to step back and say, what do we need in a regulatory framework to license these reactors in a timely and efficient manner while maintaining our focus on safety? And so we developed the draft Part 53 and we sent it to the commission for their consideration, which is part of our normal process. The commission has recently given it to us with their decisions on some of the key policy issues we outlined in it. And so where we are today is we're putting all the changes the commission made decisions on into that rule and moving forward with publishing it. So the commission gave us that feedback last month in March. And so we have 6 months to get it revised and to get it out to the public. And that's when we're going to put out the proposed rule and ask the public to comment on the rule. And we'll get official comments from the public. And what the NRC does with those comments is we go through every single one, we consider them in totality, and we make changes to the rule based on what's appropriate in those comments and stuff. And then we'll go through a process of finalizing the rule and getting it out to everyone. So that will happen over the next couple years. We're finalizing the schedule now that we have the information from the commission. So we literally met on that yesterday, and I don't have a final schedule for when we'll have it out, but I guarantee we're going to beat the date that the Congress gave us in that law, which is 2027. So we're on track to beat that.
Thank you. Very helpful summary of the process there. And you touched on, you know, Part 50, Part 52 a bit, but what are some key differences between the proposed Part 53 as it stands now and Part 50 and 52 that governs the light water reactors?
One of the key differences is that we have seen a tremendous advancement in the capability to use tools like probabilistic risk assessment. And probabilistic risk assessment, for people who aren't familiar, is a way to look at the holistic safety of the facility and rank and order the important features in that facility for protecting public health and safety. So it'll help you identify which are the key components, which are the key structures that are the most safety significant in that facility. So it's an incredibly powerful tool. So we're using it as a key element to help us in Part 53 to license in the most efficient manner possible. So PRA opens doors for us to be able to do things in a focused, efficient manner. So it's a fundamental piece of Part 53, and it was used a little bit in Part 52, but not to the extent and the capability that we can today, because we just have so much better technology than we did 20 or 30 years ago. Some others are things around having a higher level order on how we treat radiation protection and have the right focus on what is necessary for protecting the public and protecting workers at the facility on radiation protection and things like that. So it really takes the fundamental principles that we were very prescriptive on in Part 1552 and takes them to the state of the art today and what is needed for the public health and safety and for us to make reasonable decisions on it.
Yeah, that's very helpful. And I think that's right, where the regulations should be aligned with the technological advances of our time. So that's really great to hear that the NRC is incorporating those technological developments into the rulemaking process. So we've talked about the function, the size, the power output of advanced reactors and how different they are than power reactors. Can you please talk a bit about some of the key challenges that the agency is facing in developing this framework for Part 53?
So probably the biggest challenge I would tell you is the diversity of the technologies.
Right.
So when I mentioned before that technology inclusive piece. So as we try to build this regulation, we want to make sure we build it so that we'll focus on it and they will focus on the most important aspects. And that means building something that can accommodate all these different technologies and make sure that we have a rigorous program to demonstrate that safety. Probably one of the others is we need to do the testing. We need to do the analysis, the good, hard science and engineering to support the basis for those decisions. And that takes time. That's work that has to be done because every computer code that we do to analyze and predict has to be supported by good testing, good experiments, and engineering that goes on behind it. So those are some of the key elements that are both we and the industry are working on to make sure that we have a sound basis for these technologies so that when we deploy them, we have confidence in their safety.
Yeah, that's very good. Very good. So just switching gears a bit on the process of the regulatory development to some of the design certification applications that you currently have in hand. So our audience is particularly interested in the current status of some of those advanced reactor designs that have been submitted to the NRC by several companies. How many designs have been submitted in your estimation?
Probably you could say three or four, depending on how you do the count. So you may be aware we certified the design for the NuScale facility, yes, which is a light water technology. Yep. They did a lot of great work in the design and developing that. They've come back to us recently with a new version that has the power level increased by about a third in the facility. So we're in the middle of the review of that and the looking at the changes that were included in that design. So we're doing that review right now. Kairos, which is an advanced reactor using a non-light water technology, we gave a construction permit to their first design. It's a test reactor. So they're building what we call a test reactor, something where you're building it to collect data, analysis, and experimental information that'll support ultimately a full-scale design. So we've given a construction permit to, it's called Hermes. And so we gave a construction permit to Hermes 1. And that went so well. We did that in 18 months. And we did it on schedule and on a budget that we developed that they immediately came back and gave us what they're calling Hermes 2. And it's the next iteration. And so we're doing that review right now. And all of that is building to what they will have as a commercial version ultimately. So doing great work with Kairos. We're also reviewing a new research reactor. So we talked about research reactors and the value that they can have. So Abilene Christian University has submitted a research reactor design that's really interesting and really unique because it's called a molten salt fueled reactor, which means that in the coolant is actually liquid fuel. The fuel is actually in the suspended in the coolant. And that's a very different technology and a very different design. And we're in the middle of the review now for that. So it'll be great when we can get through that and we can bring another research reactor that can train students and help with education, help with research. And then just last month, within the last week, we got the application from Terra Power, which is a reactor that's going to be built out in Kemmerer, Wyoming. And it's a great and interesting technology because it has the capability to not only produce electricity and put it on the grid immediately, but to store the energy and then put it out on the grid later, which is a great feature to potentially have. So we're getting a number of applications, and that's just the front runners. We're going to have a whole bunch more coming in here over the next year that we're going to have to review. So from a number of different companies that are doing great engineering work.
Yeah, thank you for that great overview of those four applications. And just for the audience out there, what does a typical licensing process look like for these designs?
Depending on what pathway they choose, whether they want to do Part 50 or Part 52, it'll look a little different for each technology. So most of the companies that choose Part 52, the design is complete.
Okay.
They're ready. They have all the information. So NuScale chose to use a Part 52 process and come in with a complete design for us to review. And at the end of that, they get a certification or approval that the design is safe. And then they'll come back a little later and get permission to construct and operate that with a combined license is something that we call. And that's what they were planning to do in Utah until they changed their plans and took a different route. A number of other companies that are still designing some aspects, they'll go through Part 50 route. And in the Part 50 route, you take two different steps. The first is you get a construction permit that authorizes you to start to build the facility. And for that, we do a review based on the extent of your design at that point. There you get some confidence that, hey, I've resolved some of the major issues. I have confidence in where I'm going with my construction, but I get to feedback insights and perspectives throughout construction before I come back to the NRC for the final operating license. So they have to come back for a second round with us and get an operating license at the end of construction. And that allows them to start up the reactor and run it. So depending on which way they want to go, they pick one of those two routes. But once they come in with us, both of the routes have kind of the same goals and responsibilities. We'll do a complete safety review of whatever submitted to us. We'll make sure it meets all the commission's regulations, that it protects public health and safety, that we have confidence they can run it in a safe and secure manner. And we'll look at some other things in there. We'll look at security of the design. We'll make sure that the facility is protected from security events in the country. And then we'll do a detailed environmental review as well. We're required under the National Environmental Protection Act to look at the environmental impacts of these facilities and ensure that they don't have adverse effects on the environment. And that environmental review will inform the safety decision that we make at the end of the day. So whichever process you follow, you have to do those same elemental pieces. It's just done in a different order and different format.
And we talked a bit at the beginning of the episode about the regions that the NRC has. When a licensee or an applicant submits a Part 50 or Part 52 application, is the region doing these reviews for safety and environmental, or is it headquarters here in Rockville?
Great question. Headquarters in Rockville runs the licensing part of the NRC's program. So we have the technical expertise here with all the engineers and all the scientists. So we have nuclear engineers, electrical engineers, chemical engineers, mechanical. Then we have biologists and archaeologists and other skill sets here in the agency to be able to do all the pieces that we need to do. Our regions are phenomenal at the job they do, and their real primary responsibility is to provide the oversight, to do the inspections at the operating facility. So once we get the reactors licensed and we enter construction, that's where our regions come in and really help us. Really, it's driven out of our Region 2 office. We consolidated construction activities in Atlanta, which is our Region 2 office, and they provide construction oversight as things progress. We're in the process of building a new construction oversight program for advanced reactors because their construction is going to look very different from a large reactor. In those large reactors, everything's brought to the site and constructed on site. Many of these reactors, right, we call them small modular reactors or advanced reactors, are modular. They're going to be built in factories and then transported to sites. So we have to build a new type of oversight program that puts the right emphasis on the safety aspects of those designs while they're going through the manufacturing process so that when they get to the site, they can be installed and started up. So we have to adapt ourselves a little bit to be ready for that business model, but we're making that progress. We're doing that right now.
Yeah, very helpful. And you talked a bit about the four applications and where they are in the licensing process or review process. Is there anything else you wanted to share about the agency's great progress in reviewing and licensing these designs and technologies?
Absolutely. Something I would talk about is something that we encourage our reactor companies that are considering getting licensed from the NRC to do, and that's what we call pre-application. And pre-application means you're not quite ready to submit an application to the NRC, but you're working through a number of the key design elements and safety aspects of your facility. So you can come to us on a voluntary basis and seek NRC review of certain portions of your design. Maybe you want to get the fuel pre-approved by the NRC so that you won't have to have that part of the review done later. So companies like to use that because they get certainty. They get confidence that the NRC finds something acceptable. So a lot of these companies, we have over 15 different vendors in pre-application with us right now, submitting what we call white papers and topical reports. And those are just various forms of technical and engineering analyses to us that we review. And then we write reports saying, yes, this is acceptable if used this way and in this manner. So it's a great thing. We've done hundreds of those in the last couple of years to prepare the way for many of these companies. Kairos used it exceptionally well. So did TerraPower. So what it does is when they get those things resolved early, we can streamline our review when they ultimately come in. We'll do a more efficient, more timely review because they took the initiative to get those things done while they were preparing the rest of their design for coming in for the application.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great tool for the review process. So you touched on the pre-application licensing option or just review process. What are some other best practices for licensees and applicants who are submitting applications for these technologies?
In addition to the pre-application, you can't engage us early enough, right? The sooner we understand your plans, the better we can prepare for them. And so we encourage outreach to us from these companies so that we can start to talk to them early. Because one of the things in the government, we have to develop our budgets a few years in advance because they have to go through all the steps with the Office of Management and Budget and with Congress and the White House and everything. So putting them, these companies, into the budget and planning for their work needs to happen a couple years before we expect their actual applications. So the sooner and the earlier they come in to talk to us, give us confidence on their schedules and their preparations, the better we can prepare ourselves. We can assess what skill sets and resources we're going to need to do that work, and we'll be ready when their applications come in. One of the things that we're really doing to streamline our reviews and focus them is we've switched our approach to develop what we call core teams of staff. So we put a dedicated team. You could think, a lot of people call them kind of tiger teams, but we call them core teams because they're the core of the safety elements of the design that are critical to us. And we'll put that team together as those applications are coming in and be prepared. So helping us with that pre-application, helping us with your planning and your scheduling, lets us develop the concepts for those core teams so we're ready to hit the ground and run when you get your application in. So those are by far the most important aspects of it. The other thing is, if your technology has some new and novel aspect, we might need to do research. You might need to do research. And the earlier you engage with us, the earlier we can identify those so that we avoid gaps or challenges when your application shows up, because we can say, you know, 2 years before, you need to go do some research. You need to do some testing on this so that you'll have a basis when you come in. You don't want to find that out the day you submit the application to us.
Yeah, that's great. One thing I've told my clients who work with NRC on several applications, both on the material side and a reactor side, is I just really emphasize agency engagement. I think the NRC is very good with working with the industry on applications, and it's great to hear that there are these teams developed to support this new technology. So very great to hear. And we just thank you so much, Rob, for your time. This has been tremendously informative, and I think it helps to demystify some of the thoughts around advanced reactors and what the NRC does. So thank you very much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks for listening to People, Places, Planet, the official podcast of the Environmental Law Institute. Our work wouldn't be possible without the support of people like you. If you'd like to learn more about what we do, attend one of our events, or support our work financially, head to eli.org.